Everyone, today's daf in Yevamos is Tesvav. Just a couple more dafim to go until we finish the first parak of the Masechta. We're behind one daf Yudalad Amud Aleph, and we are right in the middle of the Amud. We're starting today with the words. Tashma. Okay, it's about halfway down in the Amud. It's five lines before the lines get wide. Okay, just a brief overview. Beforehand, just thanking the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf, Daf, Bilan, Zech, Nishman, Sol, Lupin, Zaltzman. And we are continuing from yesterday's discussion. Yesterday's discussion, really a fundamental debate that takes place within the Gemara. Well, first, let's back up to the Mishnah. The Mishnah has a machlok, chim, beisham, and beisel in terms of the co-wives of an erva. How do we view the co-wives of an erva? So, since day one of the Mesachta, the Beza Mad Aleph, the Mishnah told us that the co-wife of an erva is an erva. And just like the erva itself is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam and Chalitza, so too is the tzaras erva, the co-wife of an erva as well. And that's been the case since the first day of the Masechta. The Mishnah goes over 15 different scenarios where your brother is married to one of your ervas, meaning the first Mishnah goes over 15 different scenarios where your brother could be married to one of your arayos, even though she's not an erva to your brother, she's an erva to you. Simplest example will be your daughter. Your brother's married to your daughter. And the brother dies, and so now your daughter is looking at you as a candidate for Yibum. So because she's an erva, she's going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum. And what about the co-wife? If your brother was married to other women as well, so the Mishnah says they're going to be exempt as well. Not only the co-wife is going to be exempt, but so are same, even the co-wives of the co-wives, as we discussed in the beginning of the Masechta. Lo and behold, in the Mishnah, in the second Mishnah of this parak, we learned that this is not everyone's opinion. This is the opinion of Beis Hillel, not the opinion of Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says that the co-wife of an erva is not going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam Mechalitza. There's still going to be a zika according to Beis Shammai, and that means then that if there's more than one wives of the brother, more than one widow, even though one of the widows is an erva, but the co-wife of the erva is not released from the zika, and therefore there'd be either a mitzvah of Yibam or Chalitza to the co-wife of an erva. That is the opinion of Beis Shammai. Okay, and as the Mishnah itself pointed out, and we pointed out in yesterday's daf, there's going to be some very significant and serious practical differences between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. In terms of, from Beis Shammai's standpoint, well, how do we look at these women, these co-wives of an erva? So if, from Beis Shammai's standpoint, so there's a mitzvah of Yibam, and if you let them go, so that's Yivam Lashuk, which is a law in the Torah. From Beis Hillel's standpoint, how are they viewing the Sarah of an erva? The Sarah of an erva is an erva. So that means that from Beis Hillel's standpoint, what's Beis Shammai doing? Beis Shammai is marrying a woman who's an erva, which means that the subsequent children would be mamzerim. Okay, so obviously this results in a major debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where the stakes are enormous. Okay, that's the Mishnah. And then we saw yesterday the Gemara, and we're in the middle of a lengthy discussion of the Gemara, but it really boils down to one simple question. And that is either Asu or Lo Asu. Meaning we know in the Beis Medrash, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had a Machlokas. That we know. But the question on the table is, did that Machlokas in the Beis Medrash translate into practical Halacha? Meaning, did Beis Shammai take their position and actually practice their position that they held in the Beis Medrash? That is the question. We saw this yesterday as a machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. We saw this also yesterday as a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Okay, so machlokim, your main amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, your main amoraim in Bavel, are debating this very question of whether asu or lo asu. Okay, and what we will be doing over the course of today is we're going to try to come to some sort of clarity on this issue. Really, the Gemara is only going to arrive at a definitive statement. Not even at the end of today's daf, meaning but the beginning of tomorrow's daf, on the top of Tezayin and Aleph, then and only then will the Gemara come up with a definitive statement of whether Aser or Lo Aser. Just to quickly review, not a minor issue, but another issue, which is corollary to all this, is the issue of Lo Siskodudu, meaning that we know that when the Torah is practiced, the Torah should be practiced with uniformity. The Klal Yisrael should be practicing what looks to be one Torah, especially considering the fact that it is one Torah. So, and meanwhile, if you have different people practicing Yiddishkeit in different ways, so it's near Kishtei Torah, so it looks like two Torahs, and that's a violation of Losis go to do. So one of the questions, it's the last question that we dealt with yesterday, is if we're going to assume that also, if we're going to assume that Beis Shammai was not just a position taken in the Beis Medrash, but actually practically applied, so then how is that not a violation of Losis go to do? That was the Gemara's question yesterday. And essentially the answer was, Abai and Rava give more or less the same answer. Rava just gives a more limited definition of Losis go to do. The problem of Losis go to do, I'm giving Rava's version of it. This is our final answer yesterday. The problem of Losis go to do is when you have one Beis Din and in one town and they're not issuing the same psak. Some of the members of Beis Din are going like one and some of the members of Beis Din are going like the other. That's the problem of Losis go to do. But if it were multiple Beis Dins in one town, or according to Abaye, multiple Beis Dins in different towns, but if you have multiple Beis Dins, then each one is taking a position, and then you have a group following one Beis Din, a group following another Beis Din, that's not, that's not going to be a problem with Losis go to do. Okay, the Adkan, that's all by way of review. We've done up until now. Tashma, we're on Yudal and Alf, halfway down the Amud, and here we go. We're going to try to resolve the question of whether or not Beis Shammai's position was carried over from the Beis Medrash into practical living. So Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here, b'mkamashal Rabbi Elazar, you coordinate some lasos p'chamim. In the town of Rabbi Eliezer, they would cut the trees in order to make the coals on Shabbos, lasos barzel, in order to make the iron. B'mkamashal Rabbi Yosef Agli, let me pause for a moment over here, let me explain this a little bit better. We know that there is a basic machlokus in terms of machshirei mitzvah, machshirei mila. We know that the Mila's doche Shabbos, that the mitzvah of Mila overrides the Shabbos. So, the mole can do the actual Mila itself on Shabbos. Let's say the mole doesn't have a knife. Okay, so let's make a knife on Shabbos. That's what's called machshirei Mila. So that, can that be done on Shabbos? That's a machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim in the Mishnah 19th parak of Shabbos. So what the Gemara over here is just simply pointing out that in Rabbi Eliezer's town, they fought like Rabbi Eliezer. They allowed you not only to do the meal on Shabbos, but all the machshirim as well. All the preparatory stages towards the meal. And b'mkamashal Rabbi Yosef Aglila, yo'chlem basar of b'chalav. And in the town of Rabbi Yosef Aglila, you're allowed to eat chicken and milk together. Rabbi Yosef Aglila was of the opinion that there is no gzerah d'rabbanan to eat chicken and milk together, cooked together, or combined in any way. And so if you lived in this town, you're allowed to eat it together. And b'mkamashal Rabbi Eliezer, in b'mkamashal Rabbi Akiva lo. And the Gemara points out, this is true in the Makom Rabbi Eliezer, but not in the Makom Rabbi Akiva. At the time we went to the Brisa, Kalam Rabbi Akiva, Kol Malacha Shev Shalasos Amir Shabbos and Dochas Shabbos. If you could have done the Malacha before Shabbos, then you cannot do it on Shabbos. In other words, according to Rabbi Akiva, Machshirim are not permitted. So now, question on the table. Isn't this, well, actually it's twofold. Question number one is, we see Asu. Okay, but put that aside for just a moment. Right now, what the Gemara is dealing with is losis go to do. How can you have different Tanayim following different practices? Well, the answer is pretty straightforward. Behind my tiyufta, b'mkamas makamashani. So the Gemara says, it's not a question, meaning in the makam of Rabbi Yosef Aglila, they followed one way. In the makam of Rabbi Eliezer, they followed one way. In the makam of Rabbi Kiva, they followed a different way. I mean, and as the Gemara just laid out, that if it's different places, it's not an issue of losis go to do. And the Gemara says, and the answer was so self-evident that I don't even understand what the question was to begin with. To which the Gemara says, well, the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking here about the topic of Shabbos, at least in the context of kortimetzim, the cutting of the wood on Shabbos in order to make the knife. But we're talking about chilul Shabbos. Chilul Shabbos is so chamor that we don't divide different communities in terms of chilul Shabbos. Meaning that maybe the Havamina was that vis-a-vis Shabbos, Shabbos is so stringent that we look at every Jewish community as one entity, and therefore, even if there were different opinions, but different practices would have resulted in Losis go to do. That's the Havamina. Kamash Malan, no. That the rules of Losis go to do apply throughout all of Halacha, including Shabbos. Tashma de Rabbi Abau ki ikla lasra de Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi have a metal teshraga. The Gemara points out another what seemingly is an inconsistency and a violation of Losis go to do. You have Rabbi Abba when he went to go visit Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in his town, so he would hold the lamp up. Rashi over here explains just a little bit of background. We know Masechet Shabbos, we have a basic machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, whether or not we hold the muksa, we do not hold the muksa. I don't mean that like as a simple objective statement, but Rabbi Shimon is just simply more lenient when it comes to the laws of muksa than that of Rabbi Yehuda. And then the Amoraim take positions on whether or not we hold like Rabbi Shimon or like Rabbi Yehuda. So here, we're talking about a lamp that went out, and can you pick it up on Shabbos? Meaning it was lit in the beginning of Shabbos, and then it went out, can you pick it up on Shabbos? Rabbi Shimon would say you can, and Rabbi Yehuda would say cannot. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, who is an Amora, was of the opinion that you can, meaning he filed like Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, when Rabbi Abel went to go visit him, he picked up the lamp. But meanwhile, when Rabbi Abba spent Shabbos by Rabbi Yochanan, he didn't pick up the lamp after the lamp went out. So the Gemara says, again, the question implicitly asked is, how is this not a violation of Moses Godadu? So the Gemara says, but the answer, again, is pretty apparent. In other words, different communities. Anan hachi kaminan. So the Gemara says, you're right. In terms of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan having different practices in different communities, that doesn't bother us, that's fine. What bothers us is Rabbi Abau Echavet Hachi. Okay, but there's an inconsistency in Rabbi Abau. So the Gemara says, no, there's not. Rabbi Abau Echavet Hachi, Hachi Vehechi Avet Hacha Hachi. So how do you practice like two differing opinions? So the Gemara says, again, it's not a question. Rabbi Abau, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Svirle. Look, Rabbi Abau fundamentally holds like Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. And therefore, once the lamp goes out, there would be no problem picking up the lamp because he subscribes fundamentally to Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi and that he's more lenient as it applies to Muksa. V'chi mikol asr de Rabbi Yochanan, but when he got to the town of Rabbi Yochanan, lo hava matata mishum kvoda de Rabbi Yochanan. But look, as he went to the Rabbi Yochanan's community, out of respect for Rabbi Yochanan, so he didn't violate the Muksa, Isser, as understood by Rabbi Yochanan. Not because he changed his opinion, just simply out of respect for Rabbi Yochanan. Va'ika Shama. So the Gemara says, okay, Rabbi Abau understood the sophistication and the nuances of halacha. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but what about a shamish? Right? The assumption is that Rabbi Abau walked around with an attendant who was not as sophisticated and who was not as knowledgeable in halacha. Maybe he's not going to be as sensitive. So the Gemara says, "Demo delon l'shame." Gemara just quickly answers and says, "No, he'll tell his attendant. Look, we're going to Rav Yochanan's community. He doesn't pick up lamps after it goes out. I know you see me do it. I know you think it's okay. I happen to think it's okay. But when we're in Rav Yochanan's community, at a deference to Rav Yochanan, we're not going to pick it up. Good. Tashma." And again, question now is the Asu Lo Asu. Was Beishamai's position taken into practice? So we're going to go back to our Mishnah, meaning the reason that we're now in full circle, where we're all the way back to our Mishnah, and we're going to use our Mishnah as a platform to see whether or not Beishamai's position was practiced outside of the Beis Medrash. So what did our Mishnah teach us? Our Mishnah taught us that they don't take me out of context. They intermarried. Beit Shammai married the daughters of Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel married the daughters of Beit Shammai. So Iyamart Bishlama Lo Asu Mishum Hachi Lo Nimnu. So the Gemara says, if you want to take the position of Lo Asu, so good. So then I understand. Meaning in the Beis Medrash they were fighting it out. Outside the Beis Medrash, there was a uniform practice, and presumably like Beit Hillel. And so then I understand how there was no hesitation of one group marrying the daughters of the other group. Ela Iyamart Asu Amailo Nimnu. But let's understand, however, let's say that it wasn't just a machlokas in the Beis Medrash. Let's say Beit Shammai really took their position seriously. Seriously to the point where they practiced it. Where that the kovav of the erva was taken for Yibum. Or Chalitza. So the Gemara says, now let's think, if that's true, so then how could there be crossing of the line between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Beit Shammai, Beit Shammai, mi Beit Hillel lo nimnu de b'nei chai v'la v'ninu. Now the Gemara says, from Beit Shammai's perspective, the children of Beit Hillel, not so bad. Now let's put this in context. What does that mean, not so bad? Meaning, from Beit Shammai's standpoint, the co-wife of an erva still has a zika. Now, Beit Hillel lets them go and marry another guy. That's what's called Yavam Lashuk. Yavam Lashuk is a lav in the Torah. Okay, now the Gemara is not condoning, obviously, but the point is that, okay, she marries another man outside of her brother-in-law, so that she violated a lav, the children are unaffected. Okay, so it's obviously not condoning the marriage, but the children aren't affected. Ela beisil me beisham amaylo nimnu b'nei chavi krisus mamzir ninhu. But now let's look at the world from Beis Hill's perspective. From Beis Hill's perspective, what just happened? You had a woman who was a erva to her brother-in-law with no mitzvah of yibum. The yavam performed the mitzvah of yibum to an erva. Essentially what happened? A violation of arayos. What is the resulting child? A mamzer. So Beis Hill, how can Beis Hill just simply say, oh, your children are fine, when truth be told, from Beis Hill's perspective, Beit Shammai's children are mamzerim. Again, not all the children, obviously, only those that did marriage between a yavam and a co-wife of an erva, but still, in that circumstance, isn't that child going to be a mamzer from Beis Hill's perspective? V'chitem, because of Beis Hill, dein mamzer michai v'krisos. And the Gemara says, and maybe you'll tell me, well, Beis Hill doesn't feel that that child will be a mamzer. Meaning there's an opinion out there that a mamzer is only a result of chayve misas Beis Din. The Gemara immediately dispels that. The Gemara says, no. From Beis Hill's standpoint, an erva, if one were to have a child with an erva, the child, the resulting child, would be a mamzer. So again, question on the table. How can Beis Hill marry the daughters of Beis Shammai? So the answer must be that Beis Shammai didn't practice their opinion. In the Beis Medrash, they held a certain way. Outside the Beis Medrash, they didn't practice their opinion. La'olam asu. The Gemara says no. Really, Beis Shammai did practice their position. And demode lahu o parshe. And the Gemara says, and there was just simply full disclosure between Beis Shammai to Beis Hillel. Meaning that before Beis Hillel would marry anyone from Beis Shammai, they would just do a simple background check. Any yibum going on in the family? And if there was a yibum, was there a erva involved? Was the co-wife of an erva? So with a simple background check, and there was full disclosure, so then they can marry one another.
But the thing is that the mamzor continues for generations and generations. Yep. So how far can they look back?
Understood. It happens to be the Gemara is dealing principally with the first couple of generations, right. But you're correct. Right? The effects are everlasting. So and the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, this pshat that we're offering right now is a good pshat. And in fact, if you look ahead in the Mishnah, you will see that this pshat actually works its way through to the second half of the Mishnah. Because in the second half of the Mishnah, there's a description of people borrowing kalim one from another. Now, I told you yesterday, and I'll say it again today, Beis Hillel was more machmer when it comes to taharas. Now, the Gemara and Shabbos happens to give the other impression that Beis Shammai was the one that was more machmer, but for our purposes and just saying over the Pshat in our Gemara, let's just say the way I just said it. And I'm happy to report, Rashi says that as well, so I'm saying the Gemara like Rashi, so that's good. So but anyway, they barred kalim one from another. Iyamat Bishlama, top of Yadam and Beis. So Iyamat Bishlama, demodulahu misham hachilo nimnu. So the Gemara says, look, if there was full disclosure between the two parties, so then I understand. Meaning Beis Shammai's position was practiced outside. They were more lenient in terms of taharos. And they just simply, when Beis Hillel knocked on the door, said, hey, can we borrow your keli? So Beis Shammai says, sure, but let me just forewarn you that on this particular kli, this particular tumah tahara issue came up. And I'm just, in other words, full disclosure. So mishum hachilo nemnu. Good. So now the Gemara says, but if there was not full disclosure between the two parties, so the Gemara says, I understand how Beis Shammai can borrow things from Beis Hillel, because anyway, Beis Hillel was more machmir. So there would never arise an opportunity where Beis Shammai would be borrowing a kli from Beis Hillel, and there would be concern of tumah. However, the taharas of Beis Shammai from Beis Hillel's standpoint are tameim. And so, it must be that there was full disclosure. So Shema Mina. So the Gemara says, okay, good. So what do you see in our Mishnah? We have two scenarios in the Mishnah, two halachas in the Mishnah, which are the between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And the Gemara now is making the case that Beit Shammai didn't just simply learn these positions in the Beit Medrash, practice it outside the Beit Medrash. How do they live side by side? How do they share daughters with one another? How do they share kalim with one another? And the answer is very simple: communication. Just disclosure between one party and the next, and that is how they they lived on. So the Gemara says, okay, but can I ask you a question? We had two cases side by side, the Yibam issue and the Kalim issue. And why was the proof of one greater than the other? So the Gemara says, because look, the Tzara, right, the co-wife, Kala Islay, meaning that's something where people talk about. A Kli being Tami or Tahor, it's not that exciting. Meaning that's not going to make Shabbos table discussion. Yibam, co-wife, Erva, like, okay, good. That's Kala Islay, the Gemara says that has a voice. People would have heard about it. And so, and maybe, as Rashi explains, there would have been no need for communication, because maybe the default assumption would have been if they would have heard about it. So that's why the second case about Kalim and Tumah Tahara, how in the world are they supposed to know that this Kli is Tameh, this Kli is not Tameh? It must be that there was full disclosure between the two parties, and so that's why the second case is a better proof, better evidence that there was in fact full disclosure. Gufa. We're on Yudal Amud Beis. We are continuing now, and again the question is going to be the same question over and over again. Did Beis Shammai take their practice outside? Now mind you, by the way, this question that the Gemara is asking is a Shas question, meaning it is not a localized question to just the issue of Yibum. It really is a fundamental question in terms of when Beis Shammai argued with Beis Hillel, did they take any and all of their arguments and put it into practice? Okay, that's really the question that's being asked over here. So let's go on. So the Gemara quotes a line that we saw on the bottom of the previous Amud, and that is that there's a full agreement that a mamzer will be the product of an erva relationship. Man modim. Now the Gemara says they agree. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand. Pshita b'nei chayve lavin k'sherin ninu. So the Gemara says again, we're going to go over the same issue of life from the viewpoint of Beis Shammai and life from the viewpoint of Beis Hillel. From Beis Shammai's standpoint, what are Beis Hillel doing? Yivam l'shuk. Okay? Yivam l'shuk is a lav. It's a negative prohibition. So we're not even getting into the question of mamzer, because it's not a violation of arayos. Ela Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says, okay, we're talking about from the perspective of Beis Hillel to Beis Shammai. He gufei chayve krisos hi. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's chayve krisos, meaning that's it. That's exactly what we're talking about. That is an erva. So la'olam Beis Shammai le'Beis Hillel afukei mid Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, no. We're going to go back to our first perspective, which was Beis Shammai looking at Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai looking at Beis Hillel. So again, what's happening? So from Beis Shammai's perspective, what's happening is she's a Yavama. She has a Zika. She's connected to her brother-in-law. And you're letting her go? So again, that's Yavama Lashuk, which is a lot. To which the Gemara says, okay, so what's the modim? So what does that mean there's agreement? Agreement that the child is not a mamzer. Why would I have thought the child is a mamzer? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, I'll tell you where the agreement is. Because we know the Shitas Rabbi Akiva is that a mamzer can result even from an Isser Lav. If the man and woman are prohibited to one another simply through a Lav, the resulting child is going to be a mamzer. We're going to see later on in Seder Nashim. Right? Probably quoted here in Yavamos.
Beit Hillel, so he wouldn't consider this to be a...
It's strange, meaning... It's not funny, it's just, it's odd. Beit Hillel says that mamzer only results from an erva, Issachar Reis, And Rabbi Kiva, and right, I don't know where he got it from.
No, but even in this case, he wouldn't look at it as a lav because there was no issue of, there was no lav.
Right, now, understood. But just in terms of the definition, Mamzerus, they disagree. So, fine. So the Gemara says, so that's the agreement. The agreement is that we agree that we don't agree with Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says that a Mamzer is a product of a Chai V'Lavin. We don't agree with Rabbi Kiva. That's the agreement.
What happened to the compromise
of the Chutz? Of the what? Oh, we'll get to, that's coming up again later today. Stay tuned. Tashma. Afa b'shenechelgu b'shamay b'selal. Now, b'shamay b'selal argue over a number of basic issues in terms of ishus, in terms of marriage. So, and they are tsaros, call wives. That's our topic here in the first parak of Amos. Achayos, topic of sisters. That's coming up later on in the third or fourth parak of the Masechta. We'll get to it later on. Get Yashan. That is where a man writes a get for his wife, secludes himself with her after having written the get. Can he use that get? Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Suffocatious ish, the questionable ashes ish, questionable marriage. Rashi over here is bothered. What does that mean exactly? Rashi offers two explanations. Rashi's first explanation, I'm paraphrasing, it's a long Rashi over here on the side of the Gemara, so I'll just give you a quick synopsis of both. Rashi's first pshat is, we're talking about a girl who's married off by either her brother or her mother, meaning that she has a chance to do miyun. She hasn't done miyun yet. During that period, she is suffocatious-ish, because what she may end up doing is annulling the marriage, refusing the husband, annulling the marriage, dissolving the marriage, and so therefore what may have been a marriage is not a marriage. That's one explanation Rashi gives. Rashi offers a second explanation, and that is that a person's dying, he writes a get for his wife, and with a contingency, with a tanai, and the tanai is, if I die from this illness, so then the get would work limafre, going back to the time that I wrote it. And the question is, from the time that he wrote the get to the time of his demise, so what's the status of that woman during the interim? That's another explanation in Rashi of what this suffocatious issue is. Okay, and then, not to get too involved, but Rashi points out that his second pshat is difficult because we don't find anywhere in Shas where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel actually argue over that particular case. That case is deliberated in Shas, but not by Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and Rashi then builds a case, makes a case that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel do actually argue over that. Okay, see Rashi for all the details. Number five, a megarish es ishto v'la neimo bepundak. A man divorces his wife, meaning gives her a get, and then secludes himself with her. Question is, not whether or not they had relations, probably they did, was that relations for another kiddushin? Okay, machlok is trin beishamay beisilol, kesev v'shava kesev, pruta v'shava pruta. How much money does a man need to give a woman in order to affect kiddushin? Another machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, first Mishnah and Kiddushin. So in other words, to put it simply, these are very basic marriage issues where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue, which means then that in some cases, Beis Shammai would say they're married, Beis Hillel would say they're not. In some cases, Beis Shammai would say the divorce was good, Beis Hillel would say not, and vice versa. So you have a lot of scenarios in which either they're married, not married, divorced, not divorced. And how do you live life like that? Meaning, how can they marry one another? That's exactly the point of the Braisa. Still, there was no hesitation of intermarriage. Again, not to be taken out of context. And there was chiban reyos, and there was love and camaraderie and friendship, and they figured out a way to get along. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Nimnu Hamin, Avadavalo, Nimnu Minasafik. And Rabbi Shimon makes a statement which, at face value, is another shita, but the Gemara later on will point out it's not. And that is, they withheld one another when it was for sure problematic, but not if it was a suffik. Well, we will, in just a moment, revisit that statement to Rabbi Shimon. But in the meantime, however, I can't divrei Abraisa, that's the end of the Braisa, and now pretty much everyone should figure out what the Gemara's next line is going to be. Imar b'shlama asa misham hachi nimnu. Again, we are now going to say over that it sounds a lot better if Beis Shammai's positions were taken practically. Because, again, the whole idea of this brisa is, look, we have a lot of debates, and we have a lot of disagreements, and somehow we're going to manage. Good. Eliyamar lo also amai nimnu. So, but I don't understand that if Beis Shammai's position was not taken outside the Beis Medrash, so why were there any hesitation? So the Gemara says, and again, we're revisiting the same question. I understand that Beis Hillel will look at Beis Shammai and say, you're out of your mind. That's not you're out of your mind, but that's that woman's an erva, right? The children are mamzerim. But again, looking in the other direction, from Beis Shammai to Beis Hillel, okay, Yivam Loshuk. Obviously, we don't condone it, but the child is not going to be a mamzer. So, Kedam Rav Nachman Yisro Lo Nitzricha Ela Letzara Atzma. Hachanam Lo Nitzricha Ela Letzara Atzma. So the Gemara says, well, first of all, you keep focusing on the children. The children obviously are going to be a question of whether the child is going to be a mamzer or not a mamzer. But before we get to the children, you know what there is? The woman herself. Meaning, can you marry the woman? So from both perspectives, it's going to be an issue. Meaning, from Beis Shammai's perspective, what Beis Hillel is doing is Yevam Lashuk. You can't marry the co-wife. The co-wife has to go to the brother-in-law. From Beis Hillel's perspective, so that woman over there is Mutter Lagamre, and meanwhile, Beis Shammai is having her marry off to the Yibam. That's an Erva. So even before you get to the children, the problem is with the woman herself, and from both perspectives, they're going to fundamentally disagree with one another. Okay, so the Gemara points out that that's how you would understand the brisa in the context of also. Okay, so Elatzar Asma Umashtam in Avada Disuruhu Savig Nami Suruhu. Now we're going to revisit that statement to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon said, well, if it was Avada, so then they would hesitate, they wouldn't marry one another. But if it was Safik, it was okay. Safik, okay. We're talking about Issa Daraisa. Either Yevam Lashuk or we're talking about a mamzer. So on a suffix is the derisa, of course we're going to be machmir. What's Rabbi Shimon talking about? So the Gemara explains. Lo tema min ha-suffix ala ima min ha-stam. Demodulu parshe. So the Gemara says, suffix over here is not to be understood literally, like suffix normally is meant to be understood. Suffix over here just simply means we don't know. And the full position would be that when we don't know, must be okay. Meaning again, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Shomer Torah, Shomer Mitzvos, sensitive to one another, and I understand that we don't agree. I understand that here's my position. I understand that's your position. And our children want to get married. I know your position. If there would have been a problem, I would have told you. So just give me a moment. Let me just finish the thread, and I'll come up for air. So Ela min hastam demodulu parshe. And then the Gemara says, and then, so what new point is being introduced at the end of the Braisa? The Gemara says that point was already made at the beginning of the Braisa. So the Gemara says, no, that the entire Braisa is going like Rabbi Shimon, meaning that the Braisa's main point is that because there were so many disagreements, you might have thought that the children of Beis Shammai and the children of Beis Hillel never intermarried. No, they emes v'ashalom avu, they peace and love, and there was a cord between the two of them, and they figured out a way to they didn't figure out a way, they just, there was full disclosure between the two parties, so that if in the event one would be problematic to the other, they would communicate that point to one another. Okay, Danny.
All this is, I don't understand, what happens to Rove? You follow the role, so why are they
right.
Doing this whole conversation?
So when Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel actually, in other words, in subsequent generations, there was a decision that was made in terms of who the halacha follows. But during the period of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so there was those who followed the school, Beis Shammai followed their school, and those who followed Beis Hillel followed their school. We made this point a number of times in the past. The Rambam says that Machlokas really started by Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. I mean, Gemara and Chagiga really says it, but the Rambam crystallizes. The Rambam says that up until Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, there was a couple of machloksim amongst the Chachmei Yisrael, right? Smicha, right? That was the Mishnah Chagiga. Right, smicha was a machlokas, but outside that there was very little machlokas. Like, this is the first time historically that you're finding like major fundamental differences in halacha between one group of Talmidei Chachamim and another group of Talmidei Chachamim, and basically what you're seeing here in these couple blad and yavamos is like, how do they deal with that? Right?
There had to be a precedent for all this before.
I know the... Right. Again, I'm going to paraphrase the Rambam. I wouldn't say this. I can't say this on my own. But the Rambam basically writes, "Lo shimshuas rabba sehim." Like they didn't connect themselves enough with the Rebbeim, so that there's so much proliferation of machlokas. That's how the Rambam pens it in terms of.
Like before this, they wouldn't know what happened.
Before this, there wasn't a machlokas. Now, what does that mean? What was the position?
Right.
Good. It's a reasonable question. It's not reasonable for me to answer it. Understood. Okay. Tashma, we're on the bottom of Yudam and Beis. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Hech halacha zu Rav Achaz v'Yisrael, Nasik edivrei b'Shama, Havlad Mamzil, edivrei b'Yisilo, Nasik edivrei b'Yisilo, Havlad Pogum, edivrei b'Shama. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's head was about to explode. Like, it can't be. It can't be that we're having, from one perspective, the child is going to be a mamzer, and from the other perspective, the child is going to be a pogum. By the way, just to explain the word pogum, Rashi explains, it means in the context of kohen. Meaning, a kohen marries a woman he's not allowed to marry, the child's a cholo. So, right, bereft of kedushas kohuna. So, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's head's going to explode. Bo v'nitken lehun letzaros, Shiuchosus v'lomis yabmos. So Rav Yochanan ben Nuri came up with a compromise. Now, I know yesterday in Shabbos we explained the compromise. I'm going to explain it again quickly. The compromise of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri was going to be that in any scenario where I had the co-wife of an erva, so what we're going to do is we're going to legislate on a uniform basis that we're always going to do chalitza to the co-wife of an erva. Now, like any good compromise, no party walks away happy. And that's pretty much what's happening with Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and his compromise. Because let's look at it from the perspective of Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says, what do you do with the co-wife of an erva? You do the mitzvah of Yibum. Right? She's the Yavama with the mitzvah of Yibum in tow. So Beit Shammai obviously is going to be unhappy because we're doing chalitza. That's a release from the mitzvah of Yibum. Much rather have done the mitzvah of Yibum. Now let's turn to Beis Hillel's standpoint. From Beis Hillel's standpoint, also unhappy with the compromise. Why? Because she's Ptura. There's no Zika, she's exempt. And now you do chalitza to this woman. What does that mean? For the rest of her life, she'll be asur l'kahuna. Okay. So, good. So, both parties will be unhappy. But what the compromise would do is it will now create a uniform pattern, a policy in which now we can all get along. Okay? That's exactly what Rav Yochanan ben Nuri is thinking.
Certain percentage of the Klal Yisrael, not everybody
claims. Good, so good. So, again, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri obviously thought this was a great idea. Good, it's a compromise. So, lo yispiku ligmor sadavar hachanif nitrafa shah. And the Gemara gives a description of they're deliberating, they're debating, and time up. Now, exactly what that means, I don't know. Time up, meaning that court is adjourned and we came to no conclusion. And the Gemara over here voices the opinion of Shimon Gamliel. Look, nice compromise, but what about all the women up until this point in time? What are you going to do? What are you going to say about those women? Now, period. Ad kan divrei habraisa. So, again, the second time we're hearing the compromise of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Rav Shimon Gamliel's protest of the compromise is that it only works from here going forward. What are you going to do for all the women beforehand? But again, the Gemara is right now focused on trying to extract one point from this braisa. If the position that was taken was also that Beis Shammai practiced their position, so then you can perfectly hear Rabbi Shimon Gamliel say, okay, compromise is great going forward, but what about everything up until this point in time? Because people who follow Beis Shammai were practicing Beis Shammai. But Eliyahu Amar Lo'asu Ma'aseh. So, but if the position of Beis Shammai was not practiced, so then what's Rav Shimon Gamliel arguing? Amrav Nachma Yitzchak Lo Nitzchak Ela Tzar Atzma Umanase Hachi Kamer Hanach Tzaros De Beisela Beisham Hechen Avelu Lichal Se Mem Ase Agavraya V'chi Temelim Asan Dorche Dorchenom V'chol Nesivu Tzar Shalom. I'll explain all this outside. The Gemara says like this. Let's say that really, no. We can argue. We could still argue that Beit Shammai didn't practice their position. And why is Rav Yochanan ben Nuri's compromise going to be so offensive? So the Gemara's answer, Rav Nachman Yitzchak's answer is, because think about it from the perspective of the co-wife herself. Again, not the children. Let's go from the perspective of the co-wife herself. The co-wife of an erva is... up until that point in time, Beis Hillel's position was the practice position, which means that she's free to go. So she went and she married another guy. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says, okay, here we go. In order to create peace and harmony amongst the Jewish people, I'm going to have the compromise where everyone's going to do chalitza. And so the Gemara says, and now what does that mean? It means that we're going to find that woman who just went and married another guy, which according to Beis Hillel was perfectly legitimate. But now we're going to knock on her door and say, hello, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, we just ratified the compromise of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and now what we want you to do is we want you to do chalitza. She says, wait a second. I was married, I was the co-wife of an erva, I got full clearance, I'm good. So the Gemara says, okay, but again, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri established a compromise. So we're going to do chalitza. To which the Gemara says, if you do chalitza to her, she will become unattractive to her husband. Totally understandable. Another guy's coming in and doing a chalitza ceremony with her, and her husband's going to be looking at her like, what's going on? Are you married to that guy? Okay, and it's going to be extremely uncomfortable. To which the Gemara suggested, v'chi tema lim asan. Well, okay, but there's a halachic point to be made over here. So the Gemara says, no, the ways of the Torah are pleasant, and halacha would never result in such a conclusion where we're going to go into a married woman's house, have her do chalitza because of a rabbinic legislation, a compromise between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. In other words, halacha will never result in that. That's not the ways of the Torah.
Make it not as retrospective. Make it not as retrospective just from now on.
Still, in other words, her husband will look at that and
probably divorce her.
Whatever his reaction is going to be, it's not going to be pleasant. And the Gemara says, and that's just not the way the Torah operates. Tashma. Okay, next line of the Gemara. Stuart was poking fun at me yesterday. He says, what are you going to do with this line of the Gemara? So I said to him, like, oh, what I always do. I read it, I translate, and okay, and we move on. Okay, Tashma. Again, coming here. Amar Rabbi Tarfon. Ta'aveina masai tavot saras habas liyada v'esa'ena. I'm so looking forward to when the co-wife of my daughter will come to my hand so I can marry her. Okay, now let's. And essentially, what he means by that is that his brother's married to his daughter, and married to another woman. Now, obviously, his daughter to him is an erva, understood. And what he was anticipating was that his brother's going to die. Now, the daughter obviously is an erva; she's going to be putter from the mitzvah of Yibum, but there's a co-wife. And Rabbi Tarfon, interestingly enough, is subscribing to the viewpoint of Beis Shammai, the co-wife of an erva would be mutter, and he's showing an interest and anticipation so that he can marry the co-wife of his daughter. Now, obviously, I mean, this is so obvious. Obviously, the Gemara over here is very difficult to understand, in that it sounds like A, showing an interest in somebody else's wife. Okay, that's the tenth of the Aseres Hadibros, Lasachmod. B, he's wishing death upon his brother. So the okay, all right. I know usually you look to me to give you like a nice understanding of the Gemara over here. I understand. Correct. He says things, but I'm not. That's good. I just don't think that's a great explanation. I hear you. I understand. He does say things. Rabbi Tarfon was the same tkufa, same period as Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and the Seder night, right? They were Mesubim b'Bnei Brak. Okay. Oh, in other words, right? Could be he's interested in the mitzvah. Okay, good. Despite the collateral damage that is contained in the mitzvah of Yibum, but maybe that's it. That's nice. So anyway, but again, what the Gemara over here is just going to extract one point, and that is clearly he was ready to put Beis Shammai's position into practice. Obviously, so Ema v'Asi ena. So the Gemara says, no, maybe we're going to just change one word in the Braisa, not Essa and I will marry her, but Asiena, I will marry her off. Meaning that if in the event that my brother's going to die, so, okay, I have another Shidduch in mind. So the Gemara says, V'ate Eveni Kamar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that doesn't explain his desire. And as Rashi points out over here, V'ate Eveni Kamar, Im Kebeisela Machirish Kuleyama Hachinagu. So then what does it mean I'm toev, I'm desirous? Meaning, that's exactly what would have happened if everyone would have followed like Beis Hillel. The fact of the matter is that he's trying to take on a new position, a chiddush, which would be that he would marry her. So the Gemara says, Lafukim Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. So the Gemara says, no, maybe the chiddush is as follows. No, maybe we're all holding like Beis Hillel, and maybe what he was excited about was rejecting Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Right, that compromise of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri that everyone's going to go through chalitza. No, I don't. I'm right. Much like Rav Shimon Gamliel was a rejecter of this compromise. So maybe Rabbi Tarfon also was a rejecter of this compromise. He didn't like it as well. Tashma the Gemara continues. Ma'isa mevito Shimon Gamliel shaisa nesu al Abba Achiv umeis belabanim v'yibim Rabbi Gamliel sarasa. Story about the daughter of Rabbi Gamliel that was married to her uncle. He died without children, and Rabbi Gamliel married the co-wife of his daughter. So the Gemara says, "V'tizbar Rabbi Gamliel matamid Beis Shammai." So the Gemara says, "Does that make sense? Rabbi Gamliel was a snum to Beis Shammai. He wasn't." El shana bito Rabbi Gamliel the island is Havai. So the Gemara says, "Well, so maybe what we could suggest is as follows: the daughter of Rabbi Gamliel was an islandess, and as we learned in the first Mishnah, so if the heir was an islandess." So she is subtracted, she's deducted from the entire equation, and so therefore the co-wife of an erva is not a co-wife of an erva. Okay. Hamidikani seifa. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'll tell you the problem with that. In of itself, that would have been a good shot, but the Braisa ends off by saying, Acher momrim, Bichos Rami Gamliel, Islandess Aisa. According to other opinions, the daughter of Rami Gamliel was an islandess. So you know how the Braisa works. That means that the Tanakhama doesn't agree to the Acherim. So now, the question is, if the Tanakhama doesn't agree she's an islandess, so who's the Tanakhama subscribing to? Presumably the position of Beis Shammai. The Gemara says no. And what the Gemara now is going to do is offer three different explanations in three lines. Three different explanations of what the difference would be between the Tanakhama and the Acherim. So explanation number one, Hikar Bava Lo Hikar Bava Hikar Beinahu. Maybe the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Gamliel, and the Acherim is whether or not we knew or we did not know she was an islandess. Remember, we discussed a couple days ago in the Daf, where the Mishnah says that if the Erev was an islandess, so she is discounted. And there was another Braisa that said, no, she's not discounted. And the Gemara says the difference between those two positions is whether or not we knew she was an islandess at the time of marriage. If we did not know, that's called the Mekach Taos. If we did know, then the marriage is going to be a valid marriage. And maybe that's the difference between the Tanakhama and the Acherim. Where one's taking the position of Hikarba and the other's taking the position of Lo Hikarba. Another possible distinction would be of first he married the Erva, and then, first he married the co-wife, and then he divorced the Erva. So that means to say that they were co-wives at one point, but not at the time of death. Remember, we had a machlokus earlier, at least according to one viewpoint, that maybe we would consider them the co-wife to be the co-wife of an erva, even though at the time of death it was not the co-wife of an erva.
The co-wife's always a co-wife, so...
That was debatable. And Ibayis Ema, or the third possible suggestion is, or another possibility in terms of what the difference is between the Tanakama and the Acherim is Tanai Bibiya. Okay, take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi basically explains that, again, I'm paraphrasing Rashi, see Rashi inside for more details. A man marries a woman, but with certain conditions and stipulations, and he has relations with her. Do the relations that he has with her, do they uproot any of the conditions that he made? Meaning, is the bia that he has with her basically a release of? It's almost like a release form. In other words, I know I make conditions going in, but I waive those conditions when he has relations with her. Meisav Rav Misharsha. Let's do one more, and we'll finish for today. Again, question on the table. Same question: whether or not Bishamis halacha was taken into practice. The first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah tells us that the Rosh Hashanah Li'ilanos comes out in the month of Shvat. When in the month of Shvat? Beishamai says the first day of Shvat, and Beisil says the 15th day of Shvat. What we know better as Tu B'Shvat. And that means then that if you take an Esrog off the tree, so if you maintain that the 15th day of Shvat is the day, is the Rosh Hashanah Li'ilanos, so picking it off before the 15th of Shvat puts you back to the previous year. And picking it after the 15th day of Shvat puts you ahead to the upcoming year. Okay, and that has practical application towards Meister Sheni, Meister Ani, second year, third year. Okay, and what did he do? He didn't know what to... Well, I gave away the answer. So he took both Meister Sheni and Meister Ani, because out of respect for both the positions of Beishel and Beisham and Beisel. Shema Mina Asu. And this was Rabbi Akiva. So Shema Mina Asu. So what do you see? That he was obviously taking both positions into account. And Beisham's position was not an academic position. It wasn't the theoretical position limited to the base medrash. Obviously it was practice. Rabbi Akiva Gamrei Stapik Levelo Yadi Beisel Becha Bishvat Amor Betesva Bishvat Amor. So the Gemara gives the answer here, that same answer that we gave back in Rosh Hashanah, and that is, Rabbi Akiva didn't know. He didn't know which position was the accepted position, and which one Beis Hillel actually accounted for. Was he the first day of Shvat? Was he the 15th day of Shvat? And so therefore, that's why he was Machmer. Okay, question still remains on the table. Beis Shammai's position was in the Beis Medrash, or was practiced outside the Beis Medrash? Stay tuned. We're still going to continue discussing this question tomorrow.
Yes.
I'll tell you what. Push comes to shove. You already know the answer, but we're going to actually hear the Gemara say it.